great episode, fantastic episode. It's just, as we've said with every guest, it's amazing how we've managed it, but each guest has, well, I suppose it's not really amazing, everyone has their own story when it comes to performing and why they're performing and how they got there.
Oh, I love it. I think it's so important.
Another unique one for everyone to listen to.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was great. And it was, I mean, it's someone we've never met, never spoken to before.
It's so great. Yeah, all the guests have been really, really varied.
Unique.
And hearing, but it's so reassuring just to hear that there's so many different ways that you can make it in this industry and make it work for you.
Everyone's story is going to be individual, you know? But yeah, so I enjoy this episode.
Enjoy the episode. Hello everyone.
Hello. You see, I let you go first this week.
You did. Thank you.
I let you go back.
That's really kind of you.
I didn't want to take the limelight from you in 2 weeks in a row. That would be me.
No. Order is restored.
It is indeed.
Hello everyone. Welcome to the show. We've got a very exciting show for you this week. And we are also joined by the incredible, the wonderful
Ionica Adriana.
Hello.
No, I love this.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a voice that I've been working on for many a year. So you know,
it's very good.
Thank you. I'm glad that I've been able to find somewhere where it's useful. So that's good.
I just love how much joy it brings every guest. Yeah. It's the simple things in life, isn't it? Especially at the moment.
Little things.
Absolutely. Yeah. How are you? How's life? What's lockdown been like? All the questions straight off.
All the questions. There you go. Yeah, grand. I mean, obviously it's had its ups and downs. It's had its really sad times. But you've just got to have perspective and just go, I could be in a lot worse position. I mean, I have, there has been points where it's been like, gosh, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. And then you do. And then you find light and shade in all walks of life anyway, don't you? But it's, I started baking. I'd never baked before. And then I made 556 cakes for free for people just to cheer them up. Didn't kill anyone, I don't think.
I saw that on your, did I see that on your Instagram somewhere?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, what was that for? Did you just thought, I'll make these and give them away, or was that for a charity or something? I can't remember.
No, well, I basically, my mum loves going to cafes, so I tried to make her a cake, and I was like, oh, I've made one cake. It means I can make the world cake. So I was like, if anyone, so I put it on this group, rookie mistake, I put it on this group on Facebook of our town, and it's got about 11,000 members, I think, and said, if anyone wants cake making, let me know, and I'll bring it round, I'll make it, and I'll just drop it off your house for free, just to cheer people up, thinking, they know that I'm an idiot. Like, I'm never going to be able to bake a cake. Anyway, I just got inundated and it just spiraled out of control. So when I got to near 500 cakes, I thought, this is it. I'm going to have to, just crazy. I thought, I'm going to have to put a stop to this. So I thought, do you know what? How can I make this stop? Because people kept saying, oh, I'll give you some money, I'll give you this. And I was like, no, that's not what this is for. And so then I got loads of donations. I got one from Tesco's, like a whole trolley full. I got about 100 eggs. I got a 16 kilo bag of flour. Loads of people in the community were just giving stuff. I had like farm shops dropping stuff off at my house. I've got aprons made, drawings done. It was amazing. And then I started getting gifts when I went to people's houses. So it was really cute. Then at the 500 mark, I was like, right, let's finish this. And then I auctioned the cake off thinking, I've made 500 and odd cakes of Victoria sponge. Let's make a rainbow cake. Never done that before. And then I decided, yeah, let's do that. So I auctioned it off thinking it's not going to make a lot of money because one person's going to be buying it. So, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds, 100 pounds would be nice. Anyway, this man from Hampshire, bearing in mind I live in Yorkshire, said, I'll buy you cake. And it got up to, I think I ended up raising 650 quid.
Oh my God.
For a cake?
For
an idiot making a cake. Incredible. And then someone on top of that made a handmade stand, like he carved it and stuff. So I thought, do you know what? I'm going to auction it off together. And then the anonymous bidder or whatever it is, said, if you can get your stand, the cake stand, up to £150, I'll match it. So the poor guy in Hampshire never even got the cake. So he was like, you just give the cake. Because I was like, I don't know how to get this cake to Hampshire. He was like, I don't want it. Just go and deliver it. So I took it to the local hospital.
Wow. That is an incredible story.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Great example of community coming together in like crisis.
That's such a heartwarming community story for COVID.
Great. So this is the getting to know you section, which Geddy hates it when I tell people this, but I'm very proud of it. I found a lovely bit of getting to know you, the piano from King and I.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
You know, it's a bit tacky, but you know, it's, you know,
I think it's pure class. It's radio four, mate. That's where we're at.
Radio.
It's going to be emotional. I can feel
it's more like, oh no, I was going to make a Phoenix Nights thing. They say at the beginning, the radio show is called Chorley FM, and it goes, Chorley FM, coming in your ears. <I'm> joking.
Wow. I don't think it's quite that bad.
Anyway, there you go.
Ionica, you've had a very interesting career.
So far, I might add.
We were obviously just reading up about you. You seem to have done it all. You seem to have done loads of bits all over the place. How did you get started? Like, what made you want to become an actor?
Well, I very much was into sport when I was at school, and I thought I was going to maybe do sport professionally. And then I had a horse riding accident. I know, get the violins out. It wasn't that bad. I just knew that I couldn't do sport at such a high level. And I really, really loved gymnastics. I'd done it growing up. So I knew whatever I was going to do, it was going to be very much either creative or vocational. So I thought, what's the closest thing to gymnastics? Dance. Never really danced. Really liked singing, but I'd never really sang. So I thought, you know what, I'll try the musical theatre course because then it's not so heavily dance-based. And then I was going to do photography as well at York College. And I went on the day thinking that's what I was going to do. And they said, oh, you can't do photography because that's a BTEC course. So I was like, right, okay, I'll do that then. So I did the musical theatre. And then I think maybe five of us out of our year group got into drama school. And I was always told, oh, you'll never get into drama school. It's too hard. You'll never get in at 18. So I started auditioning when I was 17 to go when I was 18.
Yeah.
And then when I did get into drama school, the first day of drama school, they said that 4,000 people have applied and there's 16 of you in this year. And that really then made me go, I can't take this for granted. Because you hear it all the time, that kind of white noise of how hard it is to get into drama school and all the rest of it. And then at East 15, they sit you down on the first day of the school year and just kind of introduce themselves, tell you all about it. And I remember them saying that only 3% of you will be working within 5 years of graduating. And I thought then, I don't know, I don't care what I do as long as I'm that 3%. And I know that everybody would have been thinking that in that room, but it stuck with me forever, that. Yeah. So I was like, I will be that 3%.
I bet. Yeah, it's a kick up. It's a kick up that bum, really, isn't it? You hear that kind of percentage and you think, and it's a stressful thing to hear, but ultimately they're not saying that, I suppose, to be horrible. They're saying that to be realistic, aren't they? And I remember a voice teacher at RAM when I was there. I did the MA at RAM last year, a musical theatre, and we had a teacher who said, you know, the likelihood is after COVID you're going to have like less than that people who are going to be successful because of this whole thing. And then you sit there and go, blimey, I'm really gonna have to work really hard now to be in that even 1%, 2%.
The thing is now as well, what I've been trying to explain to people over this year is that the industry, I think something like 97% of actors are out of work at one time, but it is absolutely saturated with unemployment at the minute, because the people that you wouldn't normally be against, so say if someone's on a ship for a year, you've got all of that, those people out, you know, on a ship for a year. Mm-hmm. You've got all the people that are in town in a show, and then you've got all the people that are on tours, and then you've got mini tours and stuff like that. So anyone that has those long contracts now are also unemployed. And then you had all of the people that you wouldn't normally be fighting against for that job now have nothing, because the theatre industry, like it's just on his knees, isn't it? And also what people don't realise is that it isn't just the job that you're in. Some people have got jobs booked for a year afterwards and then now can't take that job because then it would clash with something else. And yeah, it's even worse now for unemployment, but you've just got to take it. And if you can survive, do it.
Yeah. I think it's just about hanging on in there till things restarting. Cause like you say, everyone's just kind of starting from square one. Yeah. Even the people who are like, even the stars. Top. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just like, and obviously people, you know, producers are going to go to them first for jobs because they'll bring the audiences in. So people, you know, like, you know, a top grad who might have gone into, I don't know, as an example, Les Mis or something, might now not get that because they might go, okay, well, let's do a bit of a stunt cast and bring someone in because they're not working because no one is. So they're free now.
And also the people that have been in training. I mean, I spoke to someone recently who her entire first year was in her box flat. And then in her second year where she's there now, she's only been in, I think, the entire training, like 2 or 3 months or something like that in total. And their syllabus now is pas de deux. You then can't employ that person to do a pas de deux. They've not trained in it yet, and yet they'll still graduate with that degree. It's frightening. It's hard on them because they haven't had the training that they deserve. Well, no one's deserved of anything, but that's what they're paying for and that's what they auditioned to be. I really think it's such a hard one, isn't it? Because, I mean, some people have really upped their fitness and really tried hard in lockdown to maintain their fitness, and some people just don't have the space. So then you can't hold a year back because some people will continue training and have private lessons and stuff like that. But then... You cannot do a ballet class. You cannot do these classes on your own. That's why you go. That's why you have 40 hours a week of this intense training, because it just can't be done by yourself.
No, the great thing about drama school is the equality, isn't it? In terms of like everyone's in that room, you're all on the same level, you're all learning in the same space, going for through the same things together. And everyone's got kind of like everyone's got the same chance once you're there.
Yep.
Exactly, whereas in the moment, like you say, you know, if some people are lucky enough to live in London but live at home, for example, and have big living rooms to be able to do all this dancing in, you know, they're in the same class as someone who's literally sat in their room, you know, little box room, kind of they stick their leg up and they're kicking their bed. It's not the same quality of education, is it?
And I you know, I had ballet classes for weeks in my dining room, you know, and it, but I mean, there's a running joke on this podcast, like me and Tom, we can't dance, really. We're not dancers, you know, we're singer actors. We're not, we can move occasionally, but not dance.
Not even move well, move occasionally.
Occasional. If the director sees me not moving, I'll be like, oh, all right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll move. Sure. But, you know, getting the ballet lessons that I was having in person, you know, great. As soon as they were at home, I mean, it was a total show.
Really. Yeah.
The way you said
it's hard though, isn't it? Especially if you've never danced before, you go to drama school and you are an actor singer, you don't know to tuck your pelvis in, and even when you're really good, you're still never not being corrected in something like ballet.
It was
crazy. And once we're on dance, I suppose it's a good time. So it's like when I was going through, I noticed quite a few music videos and stuff. Like, how did you, we haven't really, obviously we've not had anyone who's been involved with music videos so much, so what was that like? What was it like kind of being involved with that kind of side of the industry?
Really different, actually. They're always really quickly made. They're usually shot over a day or so. I started doing them through an extras agency, and there's a lot of snobbery around extras work, which, I mean, you do have to be careful not to do too much, because if you're seen in it, then you can't audition for regular roles and stuff like that. But I think it's the biggest learning. I think you learn what not to do as well, which is really important when the focus isn't on you. So when you see someone making a mistake, and it also the terminology of what's a mark. Some people come into this completely green, and like if you're coming from a musical theatre background and you haven't done a TV syllabus in your training, you don't know what all the words mean, and you don't want to be cast it as a principal role in something like Line of Duty, and they go, can you stand on your mark, please? And then you're just completely like, what? That doesn't look good. And I think it's like being a mechanic. You have to work your way up, and I don't think that this industry is any different. I mean, obviously the opportunities come in different ways. So that's where I really started doing music videos. So I did loads and loads of really low budget ones, free ones. And then I started doing ones for bigger names. So I did like Cheryl Cole, Dizzy Rascal, Lily Allen. Mm-hmm. I actually played a hot dog in that because I played her body double. And they're eight. Hey, they're great. Really good fun.
That's cool.
Yeah. You usually hear the track a lot.
Yeah, I bet that's just on repeat the whole day. I bet by the end you can't. I bet you're going to sleep and it's just like playing.
Yeah.
All night. Yeah.
Do you ever have ever have nightmares where those songs are still playing around in your head and you're just dressed?
Well, you hear it like a few years later and you're like, oh gosh. But it's nice as well because it's nice though because it's like the whole you like have a nostalgic smell of something and you go, oh, I remember that time. And with the Cheryl Cole one, I remember it was a really, really long day. But I met some ace people and you learn a lot and you learn your tolerance and you know what you can do and you go, yeah, this is for me. Or actually, do you know what? I probably wouldn't like to do film doing this because I don't want to wait around this long. So it's a good education too.
I was looking at your drama school. it was really interesting. The drama school education that you had was not the most conventional in terms of you kind of, I think you went to two or three, didn't you? Because of various.
Yeah. Yeah, things. I did. Yeah. So I went to E15.
Yeah. You did combat, didn't you?
Yeah, I did the stage combat.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. It was amazing and I loved it, but they moved the school to Southend in my second year and I was the first ever year to be complete the first 3 years because it was a new course. And then we kept breaking all the lights because we were using quarter staffs and smashing things. So they were like, right, you go to Southend and go into a bigger space. And I didn't enjoy it there. And I really felt that we weren't part of East 15. I mean, of course, we had the same tutors and the training was still incredible, but I just thought this is not the same anymore. And also, you didn't get on the stunt register for being on that course. I don't know if it's changed now, and I don't think it has. And I thought, this is a very niche skill to have, and am I going to be employed? So then I left, went to BAPA, got a scholarship, then had knee surgery, and then the school went bankrupt. So then I went to Expressions afterwards on a full scholarship.
Wow. I love that because I was reading it and I was like, wow, this Annika really just doesn't give up, does she? She's just like...
No, she keeps going.
Yeah, that's really going. Cool. So you go, yeah, but you managed to get there afterwards. What was your first, after all of that, what was your first job out of training?
I think I did a day on a Holby City and then I went into Panto.
So you went straight, oh, wow. So you actually went straight into TV actually, so that's probably not as alien to you as it would be to us anyway.
I'd gone to different drama schools in between the time of having surgery. I worked a little bit doing music videos. Mm-hmm. That's when because I was living back in London then. But Panto was my first proper job from graduating, I'd say. Not that Holby City isn't, but I mean like lengthy, like long contract.
And which Panto is that?
It was Jack and the Beanstalk, and I played a principal, and I'd never seen a panto, so I was shitting bricks.
Chucked in the deep, never seen one. Gosh, I couldn't imagine what it's like to be in one, having never saw one.
A bit confusing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't understand because I just didn't understand what panto was in terms of, obviously, I knew that people boo and hiss, and I kind of got that, but only through the run did I realise the bigger the reaction, the better the job that I was doing. Like by the end, I was flicking bogeys at children and that was ace. But at first I was really frightened to interact with the audience because it's kind of really everything that you don't do in normal theatre.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're just getting all that stuff back from the audience. You're just like, shut up! I'm trying to do my thing. I just want to get on with the show.
That's it, isn't it? It's like, especially if that you said that was like your second job after, you know, all that training. And you're right, you turn up and they kind of go, right, everything that you learn, right, now do the opposite.
Undo it, yeah. And you only have like 6 or 10 days rehearsals. So it's not even enough time to, so quick. So you don't even have enough time to mentally prepare. And you don't have any reaction in rehearsals. Like you have the odd little chuckle and...
Yeah.
But not...
The titter, yeah.
I did a panto, my first panto, I rocked up. And I was playing Dick Whittington and it was hilarious because I thought, okay, yeah, We'll probably do some music calls, probably block out the scenes, do a bit of scene work, yeah. Whatever. You know, I'd skim the scripts. To be fair, I kind of knew my lines a little bit. Yeah. But I was like, oh, well, you know, we'll go
didn't
through
you,
it.
Didn't you record yourself saying the lines so you could listen to it whilst you were driving up there?
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to I was fine, but I wasn't prepared. I was prepared for like a normal rehearsal process. What I was not prepared for was the director. Literally, I stood up and he went, right, we're blocking act one before lunch.
Literally, that's what happened.
Before lunch. I was like, oh, excuse me? What? And then there was no musicals. It was hilarious. We got to my song and he went, play it. And the MD just started playing and I was there with the script like, oh my God. Literally fresh out of drama school, like, oh God, it's so embarrassing.
But it is a universal thing that happens when anyone like yourself, we can talk about it and it's like we've all had the same experience. Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant. And the MDs are usually always drunk as well, which is ace.
Yeah. Also, I just think it's one of those things that, you know, I think back to that experience and it was really hard. It was really, really difficult.
You were knackered.
But, yeah, I was absolutely knackered. I mean,
we went up to see him for the New Year's Day Eve performance, was it?
Oh, you're close to the end then.
New Year's Eve. I was in Middlesbrough. I was in the Middlesbrough Theatre, yeah, so up north. But it's one of those things that I was like, you know, now I've done that, I was like, I can do anything. Like, nothing will be that intense.
No.
Because I did one 2 years ago and it was like nowhere near as intense. Like, that was really full on. So it is, I think it's a great way to learn craft.
You learn resilience, And you don't usually have an understudy as well. So you just go, I cannot not do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Just make it
happen.
I mean,
we did. Yeah, you do. And I don't know how you do, but you are always ill when you finish. I mean, last year we did 51 shows in 5 weeks. We were doing 18 show week.
Yeah.
2.5 hour show.
But the last thing I was going to ask was about All Together Now and how that happened. And the joys of BBC singing competition / TV show. And what that's like.
Well, I always vowed that I'd never, ever do reality TV just because it... a lot of it goes against my grain, just of what comes out of these shows now and the life of I want to be famous for nothing attitude. I just can't abide it. So I was very much, I would never do reality TV. And then I got scouted on Instagram by a producer and just said, would you like to audition for the show? And I was like, not really, I'm okay. Like, I hadn't seen the show before. So I was just making a bit of a judgment. I was like, no, I'm okay, thank you. And she was like, well, just why don't you come down to Endemol and just see how you feel about it. So she said, come down and explain the show. And I was like, yeah, I like the premise of this. And I like that it was about the camaraderie of music and it wasn't about slating or tearing people down. So at this point, I was auditioning as a contestant and I didn't have an agent and I thought there's a 50 grand prize, but I'm really bad at auditioning, so it's probably not for me. So anyway, I'll go down and audition. So I had my first round and then they said, would you like to be part of the 100? No, definitely not. That's not for me. I would feel a bit of a fraud being on there. I'm not an MD. I'm not a choir master or anything like that. I don't know anything about music. I just sing and hope. So I'm good. I'll continue as a contestant. So continued as a contestant, got a recall, did my second audition and went for vocal coaching. And I am dreadful at auditions. And I sang with, I think she was Jessie J's vocal coach. I might be wrong, but she was the most incredible singer I've ever met. And I just felt I'm not worthy to be here. And they said, right, go downstairs and practice a bit more because that's not good enough. Because I was so bad, because I knew I was bad because I was so nervous.
Yeah.
They weren't being horrible. They were being really nice because they were giving me more time. And then we had the conversation, would you like to be one of the 100? No, I'm good. I explained again. And then I sang in front of like the executives of the BBC and the MD, wow, myself. And they said, why have you never auditioned for a show like this? And I said, I actually really hate reality TV and I don't know like what it stands for anymore. And now people are scouted for these shows. And one thing that really grinds my gears is when people go on and they make them sound like they've never worked or sang before when they've had 25 years in the West End. And I think you're totally doing a disservice for that singer.
Mm.
So then I was like, yep, definitely not getting that job. And then they said, would you like to be one of the 100? Said, no, it's not for me. Not that I didn't want to be in the show, but I just didn't feel worthy of being on the panel. Anyway, I had a phone call And then I was like, no, and I was like, I've really screwed it up now. Anyway, I got an email saying you're part of the 100, and then I cried. Because I was like, fair. The signs are happening. People keep saying, do I want to be it? Do I? And I thought, you know what? Don't knock a gift horse in a mouth. Something is pointing me in this way. And it was the best job I have ever done in my life. The beauty of singing with 100 people every single morning, even when you're absolutely knackered, doing a 17-hour day of filming. The beauty of being in a room with an eclectic group of people, voices, sounds, skill set. I mean, oh, it's just, you are rich. You just learn so much and you just go, oh gosh, this is what it's about.
Geddy, so this week's letter, as you can see from the episode title, is of course...
L.
Yes, it's L. And Ionica, we're really, really grateful to you because you picked for L, you picked The Lion King, which is absolutely epic. One of my favorites. I think, well, one of the world's favorites, considering it's like the highest grossing entertainment thing ever.
Yeah, in 2017, like a journal in America or a newspaper was like, The Lion King has earned Disney more money than Star Wars.
Well, you forget that they've got all those with the films. They've got, I think, 3 films. Then they've got like Lion King 1.5. I saw when I was researching this.
No.
Yeah.
You know, Lion King. I mean, at that point, Star Wars had only been owned by Disney by like 3 years. But even then, you're like one or two of the films. No, 2 films had come out at that point. And think about how much money that those films make. And even at that point, Lion King had still made them more money. And just like, that's crazy.
I can't believe how many places The Lion King is on. Still, like,
13
and
different
just,
countries, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it just keeps running.
Growing and going
like,
and
they,
going.
I couldn't believe, because normally, like, it doesn't surprise me that it's been to those countries. But so many things I was reading about where it was on. And I was looking for a closing date. And there just wasn't one. And I was like, oh my God. How many countries is this running in? Which is just phenomenal, really.
Yeah.
Mm. Absolutely phenomenal. But so we're gonna tell you, well, I'm gonna attempt to
There's no we.
I know, I always do that. It's just me.
Don't put me in with that with your whatever's coming out your mouth for the next 45 seconds.
I'm gonna try and summarize the plot. In 45 seconds.
Oh heck!
It was
that's,
30
that's
seconds.
Brave.
I know it's 30 seconds. Wasn't brave. It was just stupid, actually.
yeah, I mean, we were quite ambitious with 30 seconds. And last week, not to go on about it, but you know, I smashed it and got 45 seconds exactly. So
did you? That's good work.
Yeah, thanks. It's the first time that's happened. So you know, not to put any pressure on you, Tom. And let's be fair to you. Let's be fair to you. You are also essentially summarizing Hamlet in 45 minutes. So
you just started my joke. Thanks. I'm still gonna do the joke.
You're doing the edit this week, so you can just cut.
Yeah,
that out.
I'm still doing the joke. You guys are gonna have to laugh. You're gonna have to ha ha.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay. Just tell me ready? When.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Simba is born on Pride Rock to Mufasa and Sarabi, the Lion King and Queen of the Pride Lands. Scar, Simba's uncle, leads Simba astray numerous times until one day, trying to save Simba from grave danger, Simba's father Mufasa is pushed from a cliff by Scar. Simba runs away to the jungle and Scar and his hyena army take control of the Pride Lands. Simba runs into Timon and Pumbaa, who raise him as their own child, and he grows from a cub to a huge lion. Nala then finds him, his childhood friend, and says Scar has driven the Pride Lands to famine from overeating and destroying the circle of life. Simba resists to help before returning to fight Scar, ultimately defeating him, but sparing his life, only for him to be mauled by his hyena army. Simba rules Pride Rock, and balance is restored. Or in short, Hamlet.
Was that the joke?
That was it. Yeah, that's the joke. It's not funny now, is it? It's not funny
it wasn't
now.
Funny, but I don't think that's my fault. I don't think it not being funny is anything to do with me.
I thought the timing was quite good there.
Terrible jokes aside, 44 seconds.
Good work.
I think Well, you tell me. Henry.
To be exact, 44 seconds and 69 milliseconds. You were very, very close to the 45 mark. It was good. Well done.
Good work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That means a lot. Thank you. Mm-hmm. How do you think I did, Ionica?
That it was very cinematic.
Could you see it unfolding?
I did. I did. I saw the sun coming up a lot.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah. Do you think if I said that to somebody, they'd be like, oh, I don't need to see it now?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You ticked all the boxes.
Great.
I mean, I wouldn't. I would still encourage someone to watch The Lion King. I wouldn't, you know. I'd be like, I think, you know, they deserve it.
Maybe I should have sung as well.
No, nobody needs that.
Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. When I got to Circle of Life, I was tempted to treat. I say treat.
I was about to say treat. Wrong word, bro.
Yeah.
But yeah, the plot. I mean, we've got another Disney show, and instead of a fairy tale, this one is based on some Shakespeare. So I'm even older than fairy tales. I don't know, actually. How old are fairy tales?
They're pretty old.
They're pretty old. Yeah, they are pretty old, aren't they? Maybe the same, maybe a similar time. But anyway, yeah, it's based on Shakespeare. It's based on Hamlet. Hence the joke. Are we calling it a joke? Yeah, the joke at the
Tom
end.
Tom feels sad now.
It's okay. I'll just edit your laughs. People are going to think I'm the most hilarious man in the world.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah. I mean, the plot. I mean, it's a great film. Absolutely.
Yes.
Fantastic. But, well, I say film. We're talking about the musical. I do get confused. The thing is, I've Ionica, how many times have you seen the musical? You said you've seen it quite a few times, haven't you?
Lion King, I've only seen once, but I've seen Billy Elliot 6 times and Wicked 6 times.
Oh, that
times.
Was it. Billy Elliot 6 times. Yeah. Goodness.
Yeah. Me. I mean, it's the northerner in me. I can't help it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I never saw it. I never saw Billy Elliot. Saw
what?
It. Yeah, I haven't even seen the DVD. I haven't even seen the film. Do you know what? Billy Elliot, it's just, I've listened to it, but I've never seen it.
Right, you need to go and educate yourself, my friend. Yeah, I'm going to send it to you as a
Sky
gift.
Arts one.
No, I haven't seen any of it, mate. I've never seen anything. I haven't listened to it. I know the music, but I've just never seen it.
Oh, it's so good.
I do find it strange. I did that with Wicked, is when you listen and you know the music really well, because you make your own decision of what the show is then. And then when you see it in context of the show, it totally changes it. And sometimes it's a really good thing. You're like, oh, wow, okay.
I did the opposite with Hamilton. I just chose not to listen to it because everyone was singing. Mostly because everyone was singing it at me all the time.
Yeah.
So I was like, I might, you know, that's enough. And then I went and saw it and I was like, this is incredible. And I'm just like, if I had listened to it before, I think I would have ruined it a bit. Especially for something like Hamilton, where it's all in the soundtrack, you know. It's all there.
So for sure, yeah.
I want to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Jacob Bush, messaged because we asked people how they listen to albums, and he said, I prefer not to listen if I think there's a chance I'll see it live, which I think is a really good point, because I like you just said, I often find if I listen to the album and I go to see it, it's always a bit underwhelming because the album's so produced and it's so perfect. It just can't meet that level of expectation.
And it's like when you see a film, isn't it, for the first time, and then nothing is ever comparable. Because so if you really like Idina Menzel and you hear that sound and you listen and get that in your ear, when you then see someone else like Keri Ellis playing it and they're of equal measure, do you know what I mean? It's not it's not the talent, but you don't like it as much, maybe because you go, oh, she didn't sing it like that person. But and of course they shouldn't, because that's what the beauty of live music is that everyone's going to bring something different. But you can spoil it in that way as well.
Nice. But The Lion King.
But The Lion King.
The Lion King, yeah.
When you hear any of the cast talking, they just say it's just a story of hope, and it's about growing and learning and being and finding yourself, and that actually a lot of the people that you hear talking about it, because Simba's the lead. Actually, Nala, they all say that Nala's the hero in it. She is the driving force, and she's kind of really what drives the story. Sometimes characters are really overlooked, and I think sometimes when you see it in something like a West End show, it's brought out more.
Yeah, well, I think they added scenes for Nala.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so they added the scene where I can't remember what it is, but the scene where basically she decides to leave and go and find Simba.
Is that when she sings Shadowland?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because I think, I can't remember if this is right, but I read somewhere that the director or the writer basically didn't like that there wasn't a female lead in the show. So they really built that part out. And I think you're right. Like her, yeah, I think of the musical, and I definitely put them on level pegging.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of what they bring to the story.
Because it's a very male-dominated cast, actually, because you've got Timon and Pumbaa, you've got Simba.
Yeah.
You've got Zazu. Mufasa, Zazu. Yeah, it's very heavily male. So it's only the queen, really.
Mm. Who's in it for like, I don't know.
The start and the end.
Well, it's nice that they turned Rafiki to a female as well. It wasn't Nala. It was the director said, I want Rafiki to be a female so that there's a lead, a female lead, because it was so heavily male dominated.
And can you imagine if they didn't, they would never have that corker of an opening sound.
You'd never.
It is incredible. I mean, that's the thing. When I saw it, I've only seen it once as well. But when I saw it, I mean, you know it's coming because everyone knows that's the beginning of The Lion King. But there is just something about it that is just, it's just such an amazing way to start a show, you know.
I mean, if you're going to start like that in life, so you get out of bed.
Yeah. Could you imagine? That was your alarm.
Ma!
It was something that Tom said when he was doing the plot, like about the circle of life and how Scar had ruined the circle of life by kind of overeating or whatever. It's interesting that until he said that part of the story completely went over my head. I've never thought of The Lion King being a story about the break in the circle of life.
That's what he does, isn't it?
I know.
He destroys the balance.
Kind of, I suppose as a kid, when you're watching it, you are just kind of... You're just watching a kid become a king, and that's cool. And you're like, wow, he's a lion and amazing. And then when you see the show, you're like, oh my gosh, now it's in real life. And look at all these puppets and how cool this is. And you kind of, I've never really sat there and gone, actually, this is just a really good metaphor for life. And just kind of recognizing all the things that in life, which can get in the way of.
What you take, you got to give back.
And yeah, exactly. And it's right there in the first blooming song. And I'm just like, it's just a nice song until you realise that. And then you go, oh, yeah, hang on.
Because it's really subtle, though. It's really, like, it's quite nice in the way because they
it's
don't
preachy. Kind
of force it down your throat. Yeah. Mm. Well, it's like Mufasa, literally. Said, I think he says it to Simba, doesn't he? It's one of the lessons he gives when he's talking, when he says everything that, is it the sun touches is ours? I think he says there that basically, yeah, he says the thing where we eat the antelope, then we become the grass, and the antelope eat the grass.
Mm.
And then you get the scene, obviously, when Scar comes in, and the circle of life has just, been completely broken because, you know, it's all happening too quickly. The circle of life isn't able to happen because the antelope are dying faster than the lions are dying and whatever. Which obviously, for the current world we live in, is very appropriate. A very appropriate lesson for everyone to take.
It is indeed.
Also, we have to talk about the puppets and the puppetry and the costumes and the way they brought the story, the film to life. I think that's why it's so successful, is because, you know, I think it's so hard to bring an animated story to life without making it look panto. And there's nothing wrong with panto, but you know, there is that distinction between that and a West End show. You know,
and also you're bringing a show that there's no humans in to be played by humans.
Yeah.
There's not a human character in that show.
But they just nailed the design and the set design and the costumes, and it feels so cinematic, but also feels like theatre. There's enough room for you to like use your imagination and build the rest of it up.
Totally agree. They use, I think it's something like 232 puppets per show.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. There's our interesting facts.
There is
our interesting facts.
It's time for this week's quiz. This week's quiz is called Be Prepared, because I'm about to ask you some questions.
It's this week's quiz. And we're going to ask you as many questions as possible. It's like Mastermind. And you get 90 seconds to answer them all.
Oh, heck, right. And
there's a leaderboard. I think the lead is, I think nine is I think Joel Montague is up there with nine.
Mm. Right, okay. So
you know.
10 is the magic number.
10 is the magic number.
Indeed. Right then. Ready? Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
Who wrote The Lion King?
Oh my God, I don't know. Tim Lincoln. I don't know. Tim Rice.
Which continent is The Lion King set?
The Serengeti.
Yep. Did the show open on Broadway or the West End first?
Broadway.
In what year did it open?
1997 in Broadway.
Which theatre does The Lion King play in on the West End?
Lyceum.
How many Olivier nominations did it receive?
Oh gosh, 15? I don't know. Disgusting.
How many Olivier's did it win?
35.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it? Who played Simba in the 1994 film?
Oh gosh, I don't know, I'm sweating. Okay, next question. Stress.
How many years has it been on the West End?
22.
How many cities has the production played in? We'll take to the nearest 10.
16.
And that's it. That's time. So, scores on the doors then, Tom.
Okay, scores on the doors. Annika, you got 6.
Oh,
you got a 6.
That's okay, though. I thought it was going to be worse.
That's okay. There you are. You made
it.
There
I am. I made it through.
How do you feel?
I feel great. I knew more than I thought, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't know the simple ones. How many Olivier's have they won?
2. So two, we'll take you through.
35 was really out, wasn't it?
35 was I mean, that would have been impressive. They would have been creating their own categories.
Yeah. I think it was because Tim Rice had won 35 or been nominated or something I'd read somewhere.
Oh, right. Probably.
You had 35 in your head.
That's, I did.
Well, we're going to take you through the answers now. So then, you know, we won't leave you hanging.
Oh, great. Okay.
So for Who Wrote It, you said Tim Rice, which will give you a point for. I was going to take any of these because it's quite a vague question. But Tim Rice, Elton John did the music. Tim Rice did the lyrics. Roger Allers and Irene, help me out here, can he?
Probably Mekki.
Mekki. Irene Mekki wrote the book. Roger Allers. Roger Allers directed the film.
He did. That's why I was worried. I was like, I don't know which one I'm supposed to answer with.
Yeah, so yeah, that is fair. Vague. Vague. My fault. But yeah, I was surprised that he went from directing the film to writing the book. I thought that was quite interesting.
I'm not. It's Disney, isn't it? They like to control these things. They like to make sure there's a, you know, running. They wouldn't want, you know, they want the input of the person who probably.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. I get it. But I thought maybe director to book writer is a bit, and musical book writer as well.
Yeah, it's different, actually.
But I mean, the whole process was clearly quite collaborative, wasn't it?
Yeah, true.
Many people who have kind of contributed lyrics, music, books, stuff, all that kind of thing. You know, it's not just like your usual musical of two people. It's a team, you know, like an actual team did it.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Rice responsible for 2 of Disney's biggest running shows. Because he obviously wrote some of the lyrics for, or the additional lyrics to Beauty and the Beast, which was one of the longest running shows on Broadway. And then, you know, a few years later, Lion King. So that's probably where the 35 Olivier's. You got all the, Broadway, which year? Again, got that?
Only, yeah, great knowledge on both years and when they opened.
Thank you. I know.
It was nominated for 8 Olivier's.
What did I say? 16.
They won 2, but they won it for best costume. Julie Taymor, who obviously directed it as well, but also best choreographer, Garth Fagan, which does make sense. I just thought like they didn't win Best Musical or Best Original Score or anything like that.
And they were the first original, the film was the first original storyline in a Disney movie as well. So originality is through and through with the show.
There we go. Oh yeah, of course, yeah, because it was just based on obviously Hamlet, but the actual storyline's all an original concept, isn't it?
Yeah,
it was weird. I thought it would have cleaned up, but it, I mean, two Olivia's is obviously great.
Let's not discredit that.
Yeah, I don't think they're complaining. But no, I'm just surprised, you know, because, well, it's literally, like I said,
it's Lion King.
Lion King. You know. Who plays Simba? Billy Elliot. Honk.
Yeah, Honk by Stiles and Drew, you know, the Ugly Duckling musical.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's a curveball.
That is a curve. It beat the Lion King. But it was up against Mamma Mia as well, so that's quite the...
A duck beat a lion. Mm. That's quite impressive.
It did.
Who played Simba in the film? Matthew Broderick, who's a very talented man. Lots of films and also obviously lots of musicals. How many cities? According to the website I looked at, 100 cities it's played in. So 60. Oh, wow. You know, the thing is, 60 is like a lot. 60 is a lot of cities. But yeah, it was even, I mean, that's insane, isn't it? 100 cities.
Bloody hell.
And then, yeah, I think that was it. The rest you got right.
Boom.
What's your favorite song and why? I mean, there's so many to choose from. But I mean, what is your favorite song and why? What would you pick if you had to pick?
I think probably They Live in You or The Lioness Hunt.
100% correct.
It's just the wailing, isn't it? It's just the wailing, isn't it? And it's when the ensemble come in with the layers and layers of harmonies and the just kind of fullness of it all. It just hits something inside you. You don't even understand what some of the words are. You don't need to.
I think that's it, isn't it? It's beautiful because it's obviously about that connection between this world and the afterlife. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like they use Zulu, which means it's so nice because the afterlife, you can't understand what they're saying and you can't communicate back to them. You can't speak to them, but you understand them. And they guide you regardless, and they guide Simba anyway. And it's so brilliant that it, because it is simple. It's just, I mean, the lyrics are just kind of, he lives in you over and over again, aren't they?
Yeah. But
that moment where he gets it and he's filled with the music and it just builds and he sings it out and he like riffs over the top.
And it's so relatable, isn't it? Like I think when a song does really, really well is when you can take a song out of context and sing it anywhere and you can make your own story up. So They Live in You, I mean, could mean anything to anybody. They live in you, that your ancestors live in you, your friends live in you, anything. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And it'll, even if you've never seen the show, which you should, just listening to that as an isolated song is moving.
So yeah, agree. Fully agree.
Agree.
What was the other one you said? Agree.
The Lioness Hunt.
The dance, like the kind of quasi ballet thing they do, which is just like,
It's a really, it's a good one to learn as well. Like if you're just singing along to it, because it repeats quite a lot. That one,
yeah, it's stunning. It's stunning. It's one of those things that obviously don't think. Well, he might have done, but I don't think Elton John or Hans Zimmer wrote that one. You know, that was probably the work of, what was his name, Lebo M, the kind of South African.
It was written by Lebo M, yeah.
And again, it goes back to that authenticity thing, which they do so well. And it does, and it's so cool. And when you just bring all the aspects of what makes The Lion King such a good show, you know, the music and the fact that the orchestra has all the actual African instruments in it. And then you have the costumes and everything like that. It's just stunning way to bring in that kind of cast of the show, you know what I mean, that part of the show, the lionesses, and you know, it's beautiful.
I mean, the authenticity to use the instruments, I mean, they do say in it that the percussion is the heart of Africa, and you're like, oh, all right then, okay, gosh, hit the heart.
So cool as well when you're kind of there, you know, there's a lot of music that has been ripped out of musical theatre because money, they don't pay bands and orchestras enough, or they don't want to pay them. So, and because, you know, you could do it on a keyboard, so why pay a drummer to do it? You know, and it's such a shame that that happens. And yet The Lion King, you literally cannot do that because you lose, as you say, you lose the heart of the show. And so it's so heartwarming to go into any show when you actually see a full size orchestra, but to go into The Lion King and you see a whole box has been taken up either side full of, you know, African drums, and you see down there and down in the pit, and they've got all those flutes and all those woodwind instruments that are actually there, and it's not on a keyboard. It's just like, because, you know, as a musician myself, like, it's just, that is just something you love to see. You just love to see it, you know.
So yeah, Ionica, what have you got? Any you said you might have a few. What's your kind of your go-to stage fright story? I mean, you opened the episode with that incredible story about the anecdote cake. About the cakes. I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, I'm just really bad at auditions, and it was for a Wink Bingo advert a few years ago. So my agent says, right, you need to be able to do a bit of gymnastics. Right, fine. Yeah, I've got a bit of a history in that. A little bit out of shape, but I think I can wing it. You need to be able to juggle. So I send her a video of me juggling. Right, okay, that's acceptable. You can go. So I get an email just before I get on the tube to this commercial audition. Bearing in mind, commercial auditions are usually about 20 seconds long, aren't they? So I get this email saying, oh, you also need to skateboard. Right, I can almost juggle. I have a history of gymnastics, but I can't lie about skateboarding. So all I've got to do now is pray, because I've got to be there in half an hour. Great, can't wait.
Oh my god.
Anyway,
what is this advert? What are they expecting you to do? Handstand.
What is going on?
A skateboard, exactly. Juggling with your feet or something. What's going on there?
I know. I've thought, well, I may as well just wear a red nose walking into this casting room.
Yeah, yeah.
So I go in, and I am. It's Wink Bingo. And they go, can you juggle? So they gave me some tennis balls, had one go, dropped them, and they were like, that's okay, they're not weighted. And I said, yeah, of course they're not weighted, because I'm clearly not a professional juggler. So yeah, they're not weighted, yeah. Mm-hmm. They were like, don't worry. So I did it again. And then they said, throw it to the camera, and then we'll throw it back to you. So you've got to be able to catch it and throw one and then catch it back. So I was like, that's fine. Right, Iona, can you just wink into the camera after you've thrown the balls back, thrown them? I can't wink. What? I just blinked. Like, oh no. Actually, I looked like Steptoe and Son. It was, I mean, I know this is a podcast, but I literally was like this.
Incredible.
It was in the title.
Yeah.
I did not practice my winking. Again, oh no. Didn't get the job.
I love well, of all the things that they asked you to do, that's the thing that you fell up on.
Yeah.
The winking. Exactly.
All that wasn't the skateboarding, yeah. No skateboarding, like the gymnastics, fine. Juggle, yeah, I can do that. The winking, it was the winking that got you.
It was the winking, wow. Yeah.
It's a shame it wasn't called Blink Bingo. If it was Blink Bingo, you would have been fine.
I would have been a lot richer right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
No worries. So
it was
nice
lovely
to
meet you. Yeah, really lovely
to
meet
you. Yeah, you too.
Thank you so
and thanks.
Much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yeah, well, that's the episode.
What an episode.
Yeah, brilliant. Loved it. Loved meeting her. Thought that was great. Good chats. Very good to hear what she...
Negative tests, positive vibes.
Negative tests, positive vibes.
So, yeah, I mean, it's another day, another episode, another letter gone. I hope you are enjoying our journey through the first series of the alphabet. We've got a long, long way to go. So, yeah, if you want to get in contact with us, give us a stage fright, then our email is showshowpod@gmail.com. Or if you want to get in contact with us on Twitter or on Instagram, it's show_show_pod. if you want to just give us a follow, then please do. We've got great content for you. We've got news. Speaking of news, The Lion King has said, we should say The Lion King was the 29th of July. You know, we've got Alfred Enoch saying he's going to come and play Romeo and Romeo and Juliet at the Shakespeare Globe. Like, we've got things happening.
We most certainly do.
Well,
I've been Tom.
And I've been Geddy. And that was The Lion King. Roar!
Goodbye!
Goodbye!